MotoPod, the internet radio show all about motorcycle road racing. This is episode number 464 for Wednesday, the 26th of August, 2015. My name is Harry Lloyd. I finally have internet after what seems like years of trying to get it. And I'm joined by Dave Neal. Dave, how is it going?
All good, thank you. Welcome back.
Yeah, it's good to be back. The internet saga has finally ended. For 3 weeks, I did battle with Movistar. Pro tip, everyone, don't choose your internet provider based on their MotoGP sponsorship. It will only go badly. So, yeah.
There's brand awareness and advertising and how not to do it.
Yes, exactly. But then I cancelled my contract and that same day went to the Vodafone shop and Vodafone said, oh, it'll probably take up to 3 weeks. And I thought, oh, bollocks to this. But then they called me up the next day. And the man was actually half an hour early, which in Spain, is a pretty big deal.
He wasn't Spanish, was he? He can't have been.
I think he was Spanish. There was a communication barrier, no matter what nationality he was. big ups to Vodafone for their excellent internet service providing.
Fantastic, and welcome back to the show, mate. Your presence has been missed, but we have held the fort accordingly. With solo shows and with Martin doing his little solo shows and me not actually having to do one. And if your Vodafone internet connection hangs out nicely, I won't have to do one today either because I have no preparation whatsoever. Although you did manage a particularly sterling solo show a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, thanks. And big thanks to both you, Martin, and Jim, for all the work while I've been sort of on hiatus, in air quotes. As you say, hopefully we can avoid the solo shows because it's a lot better when you have a co-host with you, get some of that human interaction and discussion.
It is odd if you're on with Martin and you struggle to get a word in edgeways.
Yes, we have put Martin in the cool box after his explosive antics last week.
So he'll be great, it was good to be on with him last week. You're just thinking of saying something and you just let Martin go off and I just go on, you know, you put him onto a subject, I just go off and make a cup of tea and just come back and, you know, just double check he's still going and make sure he's still there. There's no pregnant pauses in between anything, but we know you're listening in, Martin, so thank you for last week, mate. Really enjoyed that.
Yep, and thank you for the solo shows along the way as well, Martin. It's now, I guess it's sort of good that everyone now has solo practice, but hopefully we can avoid that in future.
Yeah, they're always good fun though, especially now, and it seems that there's a little bit of inter-host banter going around on the emails about bringing the thunder and trying to make things bigger and better, which means that I'm just going to bow out gracefully. Mine will be standard. I don't have the technical prowess or the intelligence quota to do anything more than sit here, press record and talk to myself for half an hour.
It's all good. We each bring our own bit of magic to the MotoPod boiling pot.
Yeah, but mine's magic with a small M. You guys are magic with a capital M, and yours with an exclamation mark.
Either way, it's all important. And, you know, as I said, everyone brings something different. This week, we have Jim Race bringing us two interviews, one with PJ Jacobson, now a World Supersport winner and kind of America's, you know, last shining bastion of World Championship hope.
Just a quick note from Future Harry. Unfortunately, we couldn't actually get the Mark Neal interview that I'm about to talk about in 30 seconds or whatever. There were some extenuating circumstances and Jim had set up a time, but unfortunately, Mark was unable to do the interview. So hopefully we'll be able to bring you that one in future. I did try and edit around this, but as you'll notice, Dave and I kind of use it to segue onto a number of other topics. So proved to be a bit of a hassle, and to be honest, I think that me doing this future bit is probably the best for everyone, and back to the show.
And we also have Jim chatting to Mark Neal, the director of the Faster series, and also the director of the new Hitting the Apex, which is sort of the third movie in that Faster trilogy, but obviously since he named the second one Fastest, he couldn't really carry on that titling tradition.
You can't really turn around and call it Even Fasterer.
Yeah, exactly.
It just doesn't work. So Hitting the Apex, maybe going on a little bit of a different tangent now with the titles. I'm yet to see it, but you've had a preview of it, have you not?
Yes. Luckily, I have had a bit of a sneak preview. I think Jim also got to see it at a screening in the US. Hopefully, once the movie comes out at the start of September, so in about a week from when we're recording this, and hopefully after then, after everyone's had everyone in the public has had a bit of a chance to see it, we'll have more of an in-depth chat about it. But I thought it was pretty good. I think it's the best one of these movies since the original Faster. I think that a lot of the original Faster, just that period of the end of the 500s and the transition to the four strokes, made for really good viewing. And this one kind of deals with four very big seasons in the MotoGP world. You know, the tragic death of Marco Simoncelli, Casey Stoner's retirement, and then the rise of Marc Marquez. So that again is a really good one. And yeah, I think it's a really solid movie, and I'd certainly recommend that everyone goes to see it or certainly buys the DVD/Blu-ray, because it's a good one.
It's out quite quickly after that, isn't it? So once it's released on the big screens, it comes out on DVD fairly quickly afterwards?
Yeah, if not the same day, you know.
If not almost same time. Yeah, they're usually almost simultaneous release, aren't they, these more specialist films like
yeah.
Fastest. Try and get the best of both markets, really.
Yeah, I know that in the UK it's showing it at some cinemas, and I'd imagine in the US it's probably showing it one or two. But as you say, this is quite a specialist movie. And at over 2 hours, it's also pretty long. So
yeah, that's I wonder what was left on the cutting room floor.
Not a lot.
Not a great deal by the sounds of it.
No, but I'm pretty sure that Jim asked Mark that. So be sure to listen into that interview once Dave and I have run down all the news. But before we get to the news, we have a big shout out to Dennis Kopp and Nevin Power for their very generous donations. As we always say, all your donations help us keep trucking along and help us keep doing this magical insanity that we seem to reduce on a weekly basis. And if you'd like to join the donator/subscriber club and have your name and or personal message read out on the show, then be sure to go to motopodcast.com. Down the left-hand side, there's some PayPal buttons. You can donate as much or as little as you want, or subscribe, and everything is hugely appreciated.
Very much so. Thank you very much, Dennis. Thank you, Nevin. Great to receive that from you guys. And as Harry says, every little penny that we can get helps us keep this this show on the road. And it seems that people are still listening, because we keep getting listener feedback, which is great. So we know you're out there listening. If you want to send your listener feedback, it goes to motopod@motopodcast.com. That goes to all the hosts. And invariably, if you catch us on a good day, and we're not obviously all in different parts of the world at the moment, you may get a reply from almost everybody, including Jules.
Yeah.
Who will tell you exactly what he believes is going to happen. No ifs, buts, or maybes until he gets further down the email. Great. So if you guys do want to get in touch with Jules, he is still a part of the show in the background. Obviously, he came back a few weeks ago. So we'll all chip in at some point. If you have something to ask us, something you're not sure of, little bits and pieces of information that we might be able to pass on to you, or just questions in general about the sport, please don't hesitate to get in touch. motopod@motopodcast.com. And also, if you do get to see Hitting the Apex, by all means, write in, let us know what you think.
Yep, certainly. Hopefully we can bring in some fan opinions of that in a couple of shows' time, once it's out, and we can have a bit of an in-depth chat about it, because I think it certainly does warrant an in-depth chat, because, you know, there's not really too many MotoGP movies out there.
No, not at all. And conversely, what MotoGP movies are all made by Mark Neal, pretty
yeah,
much.
Exactly. But back
he is
on
good
the,
at them, though. He
is very good. Back on the subject of listener feedback, very quickly, Mike Moyahan wrote us an email asking about some silly season updates, more or less. And luckily for Mike, silly season has pretty much solved itself in the last 2 days.
It's about bloody time.
Yeah. With none of the factory rides up for offer this year, silly season was pretty slow, because there were only a couple of satellite seats, and those seats don't really get the media attention that the factory riders do, obviously.
No.
So, and none of these signings really come as a big surprise. So the first signing, which was announced on Tuesday, is Bradley Smith. He signs for another year with Tech 3, but with better support, so he and Pol Espargaró will have exactly the same parts, whereas now Pol Espargaró gets factory parts and Bradley Smith has to wait a couple of races. So really good for Smith, because he's been doing incredible this year.
Yeah, he has. I mean, it's the reward he deserves. I understand that Pol Espargaró has the Yamaha contract rather than the contract with Tech 3. Mm. So, yeah, he gets the parts first, but I'm really surprised that there wasn't the parity between them, because with Bradley doing so well in the standings and Paul not doing quite so well, you would have thought that, well, okay, he's doing this, so let's, you know, give him a little bit of encouragement and do that anyway, because clearly Paul's been getting the parts, but unable at this point to get the best out of them, let's say. Maybe some parts will work, maybe some parts don't. You know, what gets handed down from the factory teams, it may not suit his riding style, it may not give him too much more benefit than he's already got. So interesting that that comes through. Good to see Bradley get the contract that he deserves for that. It'd be interesting to see what he does with that next year. I hope he continues the momentum forward, because it seems that a lot of the support and the heralding has come for Paul Espargaró, and he's going to be this, and he's going to be the bigger rider in the team. But Bradley's really stepped up to the mark this year. When there has been the odd question mark over his ability and the level that he can get to.
Yeah, certainly last year and in his rookie year as well, Bradley Smith had some pretty dark patches. But you know, he said that at the start of this year, he completely changed his approach to setting up the bike and just how he goes about a whole GP weekend, and that's helped him tremendously. And I he's been the top satellite rider at the majority of the races, and you know, he's beating Dovizioso and Pedrosa in the standings. Sure, Pedrosa's missed a couple of races with injury, but still to be able to beat Pedrosa at this point in the season in the championship is really impressive. And Bradley Smith is even now still in with a realistic chance of finishing fifth in the championship, which is absolutely incredible considering that there are six factory bikes that you sort of automatically expect to fill the top six spots.
Certainly. And what you touch on there as well, the injury-free bit, that's been important for Bradley this year as well. He's been really consistent.
Fifth pretty much for Smith, which, you know, as we said, with the six factory bikes, the two Hondas, the two Yamahas, the two Ducatis, finishing fifth on the amount of times that Smith has is really commendable. And another thing to note with Smith's contract is it's only 1 year, and you know, some people might be going, oh, you know, maybe they don't have too much faith in Smith, but I think it's actually a smart play on Smith's part to only have a 1 year contract, because for the 2017 season, yes, we're already talking about silly season 2017, none of the factory riders, apart from maybe Maverick Vinales, I have to double check, but none of the factory riders have a contract for that season. So in theory, all of the factory seats are open. So if Smith isn't locked down to a factory ride, sure, he might not be able to jump on the factory Honda or the factory Yamaha, but maybe he can jump to Ducati or Suzuki or something like that, which I think would also be a really good step for Bradley Smith.
Yeah, it would. It's not always just the Yamaha factory route, is it? It's the factory route to other manufacturers.
Yeah.
Talking about having a 2 year deal, as we had on the show before a few weeks ago, that the 2 year deal is the new 1 year deal. Cal Crutchlow, he's re-signed with LCR on the same deal as now, but for 2 years. There is an opt-out clause after the first year.
Yes,
which will be possibly crucial, as exactly what you've alluded to with the 2017 contracts not all in place yet for the main factory teams. So you know, there is always one eye on that for Cal. But it is a two-year deal as a whole.
Yeah, Cal Crutchlow basically had this same deal when he went to Ducati, and we all know how that ended up. So expect Cal Crutchlow to be on a factory Suzuki for 2017 so that he can get the full set of MotoGP bikes. After Suzuki, I imagine he'll transition to Aprilia for a year in MotoGP, and then Aprilia in World Superbike, because, you know, Aprilia then really does complete the full set of MotoGP bikes. And
is he going to hang around for KTM?
Probably not. I mean, he has to be realistic at some point. the Aprilia is a good step between MotoGP to then World Superbike. Cal will probably win a couple of championships in World Superbike, move back to BSB, win four championships or something, and then retire happy.
And very, very rich.
Yeah, and Bob Moore, you can send me commission for sorting out Cal Crutchlow's career to harry@motopodcast.com. I accept PayPal, so look forward to your email, Bob.
25%, I heard, was the going rate.
I will happily settle for that. Those who don't know, Bob Moore is Cal Crutchlow's manager, so that is that joke explained.
He is the man responsible for extricating him from that Ducati contract last year.
Yes. Unfortunately, MCN did not run any comical or unintentionally comical headlines this year.
No, I was waiting for that. For Steve English to have his baptism of fire at the hands of Cal Crutchlow. But it hasn't happened this year. There's no large spread that I am staying with Honda and then he's signing for Suzuki this year at least.
Yeah, and speaking of LCR, it should probably come as no surprise, but CWM are no longer a sponsor of LCR. Obviously, CWM have had various troubles throughout the year. And yeah, they're now no longer sponsoring the MotoGP team. Both the company itself and the head of the company are under various legal investigations. So Givi is now the title sponsor for Cal Crutchlow as well as Jack Miller.
For the best, I believe.
Yeah, certainly. That situation with CWM was getting quite ugly. So it's best to step away for everyone involved.
Especially how much of the information was out in the public domain and what had gone on and who was doing what and everything and becoming ridiculously legal. So yeah, I think to be distanced from CWM is the best move. And both the bikes look the same now, which is always good for a race team as well. They're both carrying the same livery.
Exactly. So in some more silly season gossip, with both the Tech 3 and LCR seats sewn up, kind of the two biggest seats left are one of the Pramac Ducati seats, as it looks like Daniele Petrucci will almost certainly keep his seat, and then also the Australia Galicia Honda seat. So we know that Danny Kent has had a three-year offer from Ducati for that Pramac seat, but throughout the course of last weekend and before the MotoGP pre-event in London this weekend, Kent's kind of made it clear that he's considering other options as opposed to just that Ducati three-year deal.
Yeah. Looking as though Scott Redding may take up that option with Pramac Ducati.
Yes, fans will remember that back in 2012, I think it was, Scott Redding had a very successful test with the Ducati MotoGP machine when he was still in Moto2 and was, I think he might have been quicker than Andrea Iannone at Mugello on the Ducati. So
I think you might be right.
So he has some history with Ducati.
Which, if Scott, the links are quite strong with Scott to the Pramac ride.
Yeah.
So which then frees up Danny Kent to pursue options elsewhere. One would suggest that, as we spoke about last week, that Rabat could well step up into MotoGP to take Scott's place. So that takes out the Australia Galicia bike, but that still leaves the two Aspar machines.
And it looks like that the Aspar team, if they can secure funding, obviously funding's a huge factor in a lot of these things, it looks like the Aspar team will have the current 2015 factory Hondas next year. So essentially they'll have Marc Marquez and Danny Pedrosa's bikes.
Which is a huge coup for the team. When you look at what LCR have been doing and what they have with their machinery, it turns out that this now makes Aspar the Tech 3 for Honda.
Yeah, or maybe a small step behind, because we still don't know what sort of upgrades LCR and Australia Galicia as the official satellite bikes will get, but it certainly does promote Aspar above being a third tier team.
Yes, it does. So there could be options there for Danny Kent.
Yes,
he rides for Honda at the moment, so it's not beyond the realms of possibility that he's maybe looking at an Aspar ride. It seems. I'm not 100% sure where he's going to end up, but it seems that there's less and less talk about Leopard and Moto2 around Danny Kent, but more so the MotoGP option. I think if he was going to Leopard, I think they maybe would have come out earlier than now and secured his services for next year.
Yeah, you would think, because, you know, Leopard would have to secure a spot on the Moto2 grid, so they'd have to make that announcement, and it does seem quite late for that. But there's also the option that maybe Danny Kent spends a year with a Moto2 team and then 2 years in MotoGP some sort of Honda backing or something. And that's one advantage that Honda does have, is that, you know, they can help to secure a rider like Danny Kent at Moto2 ride, since they supply the engines, and then say, okay, after that you can come to MotoGP.
That's right. As we've said all along, it didn't do Maverick Vinales any harm, did it, to stay and to drop into Moto2 for a year. Especially if Danny takes a look at his close friend and ex-teammate Jack Miller, if you see what he's, you know, Jack is struggling.
Yeah.
I know the bike is the production version, and it's not going to run with the top guys. So, you know, if he wants to be battling Scott Redding and people like that on the fringe of the, you know, the edge of the point scoring positions, if you like. But next year, if Aspar do get those two bikes, there could be a chance that Jack would join that team. If, as is rumored, LCR dropped to one bike.
Yeah, obviously with the big sponsor gone, LCR kind of fall into some money troubles. And as we know, Jack Miller is contracted directly to Honda as opposed to being contracted to LCR. So pretty much if Honda say to Aspar, hey, you're having Jack Miller next year, Aspar say, okay, we're happy with that. So Aspar does really look like the hot seat for Jack Miller to slot into. It looks pretty doubtful that Nicky Hayden will... It looks almost impossible that Nicky Hayden will stay with Aspar, and it looks pretty doubtful that Nicky Hayden will stay in the MotoGP paddock at all, with Hayden's prospects looking pretty okay in World Superbikes. But I think we might have seen the last year of Nicky Hayden, unfortunately.
I think so. And with the demise of the... Indianapolis Grand Prix as well. It's the, you know, just keeping Cota. There's no need for a... I mean, I'd like to see the three American GPs. I don't mind that at all.
You know?
After Martin's American bashing last week, I'm quite a fan of the American people. I don't know how many are fans of me, but I'm a fan of the American people and the American races. So there's an awful lot of movement to go yet, and ifs and whats and why fors and everything else.
Unfortunately, it's quite far down the grid, so it is.
But it's fairly interesting from a British perspective, because it tends to involve the Brits. Whether Scott Redding, you know, is Scott Redding going to go to Pramac? Could Danny Kent move up to MotoGP? Mm. There's all sorts of different permutations, and none of which we know about. So we could sit and hypothesize about this all evening if we wanted.
Yeah, yeah, and that's the thing, you know, with a factory ride, you know, that someone like Carol Abraham is almost certainly never going to sign for a movie star Yamaha ride. But with these satellite and open rides, you know, pretty much any rider could somehow mysteriously come up with a couple of €100,000. And now we have Mike Domeglio in MotoGP for multiple years. And who thought that would ever happen?
Has he been up there before? Wasn't he on a CRT bike previously?
Mike Domeglio.
There's one for you.
His stint with Aventia has been his first time in MotoGP.
Ah, okay. It's his first time. That's fine. I'm just checking. And without these guys, it'd be a fairly sparse grid anyway, wouldn't it?
Yeah, so exactly.
It's nice to give them a bit of a shout out and a little bit of exposure on the show for a change.
Exactly. And in theory, next year, everyone will be a lot closer due to the spec electronics and new tyres. So, you know, who knows? Maybe Mike Domeglio will finish on the podium or something.
I was waiting for the tumbleweed past, and I was just going to hold that one a little bit longer.
Yeah, but speaking of more British rumours, it looks like MotoGP is going to be a very British affair next year if all these rumours are to be believed. Sam Lowes has been heavily linked to having signed a pre-contract with Aprilia and MotoGP. You know, we've had riders like Jorge Lorenzo and Paul Espargaró. They both signed pre-contracts with Yamaha to show their intent, and to kind of make sure that, you know, places like Ducati couldn't pinch those riders at the last second.
Yes.
But yeah, it looks like Lowes has signed a pre-contract with Aprilia. However, in the last couple of days, there's been strong rumour to suggest that Stefan Bradl will in fact get that seat that Sam Lowes had allegedly lined up for. And perhaps Sam Lowes' contract has been ripped to shreds, which wouldn't be unusual. But
no, because they're almost not worth the paper they're written on in that respect. Somebody comes in and they decide that, okay, we're going to go with you, but we've kept you on the line for long enough, but no, now you can go and find another ride. Hmm. Does that mean then that Bautista signed for next season already then?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure Bautista's on a two-year contract.
Okay.
And to be fair to both Stefan Bradl and Alvaro Bautista, they've been doing a pretty good job on that bike this year.
Yeah, of course they have.
The last time out in Brno was the first time this entire season that both Aprilia bikes have been in the points. So I think Stefan Bradl, you know, that was only his second time on the bike, and he's already doing much better than poor old Marco Melandri.
Yes.
To be honest, 100% honestly, if I'm developing a bike, I would rather have Stefan Bradl over Sam Lowes.
Because
sure, Sam Lowes will probably win a race before Stefan Bradl if you put them on the same bike. but lows will unfortunately also probably fall off a bit more.
Yeah, you're not going to get the feedback on a regular basis from someone like Stefan, from someone like Sam as you are on Stefan, are you?
Yeah.
No disrespect to Sam, but it'll take some learning.
Yeah, certainly.
And you need someone with a little bit more experience to develop that bike forward. But then who's to say that that may not be available to him in 2017 and just say, look, okay, have another year in Moto2. You're not really losing out on anything. We have this ride for you after next year because Alvaro's going to be too old and even slower than he is on occasion now. I said on occasion.
Yeah.
Did I not?
No, you did. You did. You're being fair. You're being fair.
On occasion. And the fact that he may then get a ride somewhere else and that people will use Alvaro's experience to develop something else. The KTM's coming through. They're going to need MotoGP experience.
Yeah.
See, I'm bigging him up. I'm not slating the guy. I promise.
Exactly. And, you know, as we say, there's a lot of smaller teams and a lot of teams that have various issues like Forward Racing, like Cardian AB, like the IOTA team that, you know, they might not even be on the grid next year. So who knows what team steps up from Moto2, steps across from World Superbikes to fill those grid spots. So there's still a fair bit of a silly season stuff to go on, I think.
Oh, very much so. And I think that a lot of that will be hopefully sorted before Misano. And then over the next week or two, we can get most of that put to bed and look forward to a fairly decent end to the season as it's looking.
Yeah, certainly. Pretty much everyone's talking about the title battle between those three guys. So it's looking to be a really good end to the season. One thing that will no doubt add some extra fire to the end of the season is Katsuyuki Nakasuga, winner of the Suzuka 8-Hour alongside Pol Espargaró and Bradley Smith, and also podium finisher in the Valencia MotoGP round in 2011, I think it was. He finished second as a replacement rider for Ben Spies. Yes, Ben Spies, when Ben Spies was out injured. And he will wildcard in Motegi on a Yamaha with a special 60th anniversary Yamaha livery. So no doubt that will look stunning.
Yeah, I'm sure. And also, Kats Nakasuga, if I remember rightly, is one of the few riders left that wears the eyes on the RI. SP Tadeo eyes?
Yes, he is one of the few. I'm trying to think of anyone else. There's
Nakano
no other.
Used to wear them, didn't he?
Yeah, Nakano, but he's retired now. I think he's one of the only... He's certainly the most well-known current rider. There's probably one or two other riders in the Japanese championship that wear them, but unfortunately that's not as well-known as it used to be.
No, it's a shame that, because it's almost like a badge of honour, isn't it, to wear that? You had to have ridden for the SP Tadeo team to be able to wear the eyes.
Hmm. So that'll be good to see. If it's raining in Motegi, who knows what Nakasuga can do? Obviously, as a wild card, you know, realistically in the dry, he's probably not going to finish on the podium, but at least his bike will look nice.
Yes, exactly. It's going to look pretty, and it's... a good marketing tool for the 60th anniversary Yamaha, which will hopefully have a drop down onto the street machines as well.
Yeah, exactly. That new R1 might actually look like an okay motorcycle if you put some yellow speed blocks on it. But anyway.
It looked okay in red and white at the weekend.
Yeah, we'll get to BSB in a second. But before we do that, we have a bit of a thinking piece. So in the show notes, you'll notice that there's a link to trunkman.co.uk. This is quite a lengthy blog post by someone who works in the media industry about MotoGP's obsession with Valentino Rossi.
Yeah, I had a read of this at lunchtime today, the first two anyway, but we only get 40 minutes, so I can only read I managed just to read the first two installments. I think the third one's due out shortly.
Yeah, and these are long articles, people. Like, if you are going to read this, you know, sit down, have a nice glass of water or something with you, because, they take a while.
Remember to get up and walk around the room every 20 minutes and then come back and have a go, and have another go. The guy, basically what he does, he's dissecting the, in a fairly positive sense, in the best way he can, and almost on a balanced perspective, really. He's dissecting the myth and the legend of Valentino Rossi. The fans that surround him, how the media portray him, and basically picking spots off it all. And saying how we're conditioned to believe certain things and how certain things in the certainly in the motorcycle racing media, are worded, and he goes on about the fans on social media. And one of his more interesting points is, and one I've raised previously, I think we've raised it on the show and certainly in conversation on social media, the theory of fans of Valentino Rossi versus fans of the sport.
Yeah, that's a big point of his, and especially in the second installment, he talks a lot about the role the media has played in kind of upping Valentino Rossi to this godlike status that he is above MotoGP. And certainly looking at Facebook posts and things like that and comments on Facebook, you certainly see lots of people who legitimately believe that Valentino Rossi is bigger than MotoGP. Obviously, if you're listening to MotoPod, then you probably care about more than just Valentino Rossi. So like a lot of the comments about, you know, air quotes fans, it's obviously quite generalizing and not really aimed at the sort of crazy people who listen to us talk for 2 hours.
The intelligent and erudite people that listen
to
this show.
Yes, exactly. But no, that's something that I've noticed since joining Dorna is, you know, you post an article about Valentino Rossi to Facebook and you'll get 100 comments, but it's mostly people going, you know, Valet is God, you know, Rossi's the best, Rossi will win, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then if you post a Lorenzo article, it'll be, oh, fuck Lorenzo, Rossi's the best, why is this guy even in MotoGP? But the really interesting thing to me is you post an article about Bradley Smith and almost all of the Facebook comments on there are actually well thought out, quite long and, you know, well constructed comments. It's this weird thing, and they go into this in the article where anyone who's a direct competitor of Valentino is painted as a villain no matter what they do. You know, we've had it with Biaggi, with Sete, with Stoner, with Lorenzo, and to a certain extent with Marquez. So you create this clash of characters at the top that, you know, most of the casual fans, I guess, get attracted to. But once you kind of scratch away at that surface, I think that people do actually care quite a lot about MotoGP, and I think that maybe this article does kind of focus too much on that top level of fan.
Yeah, I mean, as we've spoken about previously, that there are the ones that see through permanently yellow glasses. They see the world with a yellow hue, the MotoGP world at least with a yellow hue.
Yeah, and don't get me wrong, I can perfectly understand.
Every sport has that. Yeah, every sport will have that.
And I can perfectly understand why people would think Rossi is the greatest ever, because, you know, his record is certainly deserving of lots of the coverage he gets, you know?
No question. No question.
Especially this season after coming back from 3 pretty dreadful years. I think that certainly this season, you can kind of understand the emphasis on Rossi.
It's absolutely warranted this season. No, absolutely it is. But when you look at the 2 years with Ducati, and it turns out that it wasn't, as we discussed before coming on air, it wasn't the fact that Rossi couldn't get the best out of the Ducati. It was the fact that Casey couldn't develop the Ducati.
Mm.
You know, that there were always, and this is going on from the media side as well. And even now, You look at certain comments towards Casey Stoner, towards Jorge Lorenzo, and now, as you say, especially after Argentina, Marc Marquez. But to be fair, in defense to what Trunkman is saying, and as we've said previously, when you listen to Valentino speak about his rivals, when they're all friendly and happy and nice and they're not beating them, they're Christian name. Once they start beating him and challenging him, they become surname only.
Yeah. Yeah, there's a lot of subconscious in the Trunkman article. It also goes into a lot of the subconscious stuff about favoring Rossi as well. And, you know, it's not just the media that plays a lot of subconscious games, it's also Rossi himself who
he does.
Who plays
very
up to that.
So. But it is an interesting read. Certainly, follow the links that we've got in the show notes. And again, motopod@motopodcast.com.
Please do send us your feedback, because, you know, as Motopod fans, it's pretty clear that you're pretty hardcore into this whole motorcycle racing thing. So it would be interesting to get some more people's feedback on this deep topic. You know,
it is quite deep, but MotoGP was around before Valentino came, and it will be around after he goes.
Yes,
but it's that effect that Valentino has after he departs the racing scene, at least, the actual physical turning up and racing and competing. What happens then? Who goes onto the front of the magazines then? Where is the next character, if you like?
Yeah. Yeah, because
to come from, to carry the MotoGP to a global audience.
Yeah, and that's one thing that Trunkman also talks about, is that, you know, Rossi gets all this coverage, but part of the reason that Rossi gets all this coverage is not only because he's good, but it's also because people want to read about Rossi. So it's sort of this catch-22 where magazines have to put Rossi on the front cover to sell magazines,
yeah,
because that's all people want to read about, and they don't bother reading, you know, the four-page profile on Alex Rins or whatever, because they only care about Rossi. So
that is true.
It's sort of this dangerous circle.
It is, and especially more so for the printed media these days. Clicking yeah. links isn't so bad, but from a printed media perspective, where you have to catch the reader's eye on the shelf, sticking Valentino on the front page at every opportunity is going to get people go, oh, Valentino.
Yeah, and you know, at the end of the day, motorcycle racing is a business for a lot of people, and it's how a lot of people feed themselves and their families.
Of course,
so
it is.
So you know, if I'm running a magazine and I know that okay, we can make £10,000 from this Rossi magazine or £2,000 from this Jorge Lorenzo magazine, you're probably going to go with the Rossi one. Although you'd also probably want to make a lot more than £10,000 from an issue of a magazine. But there's a reason that we do a podcast and not a magazine.
Exactly right. Have you said? Yeah, no, our writing's not too bad.
Yeah, but I don't. Yeah, we're not doing a Motopod magazine before anyone asks. We have enough trouble keeping this thing alive.
Yeah, we do. Yeah, the logistics of trying just to talk to each other's enough without having to sit there and type for 2 or 3 hours on end.
Exactly. Yeah. So, but before we go into
thanks,
Jim's,
but no thanks.
Yeah, before we go into Jim's two interviews, we feel it's necessary to highlight the Danny Kent fan song that has been released on the eve of the British GP.
Oh, please, you promised you wouldn't do this.
So we'll just put a link in the show notes, because it's not our intellectual property. So no. We'll give the people who made them their dues. It's very clear that these people love Danny Kent. Perhaps Trunkman.
And so they should. He's a good guy.
Yeah, to be fair to Danny Kent, he's having an incredible season, and he probably deserves at least one song. Yeah, I implore everyone to go click the YouTube link and listen to this song. It's interesting, and it's good when people have a passion. I think that's it.
And if you have a passion for Depeche Mode, probably best that you don't click it, because it'll ruin every memory you have of I Just Can't Get Enough.
Yep. So everyone, pause the show, go watch that video, and we will come back with those two interviews by Jim Race.
Zoom, zoom.
Jim Race here for Motopod with PJ Jacobson, although you said it was Peter Jacobson before. Are you changing your moniker? Are you trying to go a little bit more adult?
Yeah, no, everyone calls me PJ, you know. My real name is Patrick Jacobson, but I really don't like to go by Patrick too much. I like the PJ, you know. It's stick with me for a while since I was a little kid, and I don't know, I kind of like it.
All right. This season, you are having a rockin' year, and it's actually kind of getting better and better as we go on, and we will talk about Sepang shortly. But and you're essentially, what, 28 points off of Kenan Safa-Waglu, who is currently running in first place. You're 15 behind Jules Cluzel, with 75 points left together in the last three rounds, that being Jerez, Magny-Cours, and LaSalle in Qatar. You're not that far off. It's got to be a little bit encouraging, and it seems like the team is getting better as the year goes on.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's been a hard start of the season, just with the other team and stuff, and it folding halfway through the season wasn't the best, you know. But yeah, coming out and putting on the podium the first race in the Honda was really good. The team works great. Everyone's really professional there, and the whole setup of the whole thing was really good. Yeah, we've been moving forward since then. You know, I've had arm pump surgery, which was really good in Sepang. I didn't have any problems, so we'll see when we go to some different style tracks. But other than that, yeah, everything's been going really good, and I'm looking forward to the rest of the year with the team. Well, I know the 28 points is definitely a big margin for just three rounds left. Jules is only like 15 points, I think, or 13 behind Keenan. So it's a bit easier for him. But I think that, you know, reality, you just have to look at winning races and keep it going that way and not really worry about the championship. If it comes my way, it comes my way. But I'll definitely be there battling for the race win for these last three races. And I won't be backing down, that's for sure.
Yeah, the wisest racers that I've ever encountered are the ones that think about race wins and not necessarily about the championship, because if you focus on race wins, then the championship will come to you. Now, you did, and you pointed out something when you were just talking. You've done something that I've only ever seen happen a couple of times before. You switched from, what was it, Core Motorsport, you switched to Core Motorsport Thailand Honda from the Czech Kawi team Intermoto Pony Express mid-season, midstream. That is not easy.
Yeah, for sure. You know, the bikes are totally opposite. But yeah, it was hard through the beginning of the year, just as the team's funding started to go down, the team got worse and worse. So it was really hard to keep it, I don't know, even on the podium for the last couple of races I did with them. But yeah, once I got onto this onto the Core team, everyone was really professional, and I had a lot of people in my corner. And the bike was really, really good. You know, there wasn't bolts scattered everywhere and stuff like that. So it was really good, you know, and it's finally good to be on a professional team and try to go out and win races with these guys.
Of the three circuits that are left, do you have anything in particular that you're either dreading or looking forward to?
No, you know, I think honestly, I think the Honda is the best bike for these last three races. I think the chassis really will suit Jerez and Guitar the last race of the season. So, you know, I'm quite really, really happy to be on the Honda for these last three races. I think Keenan might struggle a little bit at the last round of the season, because I know how the Kawasaki was there last year for me. So, yeah, it should be interesting. But I think that I'm on the best the bike to finish the season on.
I'm trying to picture you and Keenan going down for it at the wire at Qatar, and I know that would be a bruising battle, because Keenan does not give any quarter, and he is more than a little bit willing to nudge somebody a little bit off at the line.
Yeah, for sure. You know, Keenan was a three-time World Supersport champion, so yeah, he's not going to be easy to defeat at these last three races, but you know, Keenan has also had a hard year just with the stuff that's happened and stuff. So, I mean, I don't think that he was up to full speed at the last race. But I think that these last three races, he'll really have his head together. And I think he'll be fighting there for the win. And he's going to be very difficult, just like Jules.
Yeah. Well, and you mentioned that. And Keenan has not only had a rough recent time, but a rough couple of years now, with both his brothers passing away and now his child. How do you get on with the guys in the paddock? Do you guys hang out and talk, or is you more isolated? I know the World Superbike paddock is a little bit more tight than MotoGP.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it seems like quite friendly and stuff, you know, all the mechanics and teams in that aspect. Yeah, I don't really hang out with too many races and stuff. I got on well with this kid, Aiden Wagner. He's from Australia. He was on the Intermoto team just before it finished. And I've been splitting an apartment with him and stuff, so I get on really good with him. Usually, I don't really talk to the other competitors that I race with. It's just because, I don't know, you're there to do the job. And then after that, you go home and live your normal life, you know?
Are you going back and forth from the States, or do you have a place over in Europe?
Yeah, sometimes I rent a place in Italy for like a week or two. And then after that, after I do like two races in Europe, I go back home and hang out with my family at home. And I just found it was a lot easier to do that. I have everything at my house, and it's about the same money as renting a place as a plane ticket to go back home. So the time difference doesn't really bother me either. I know when to get at a race ahead of schedule before the race weekend, so I feel fine. And this year seems like it really worked out for me going back and forth.
Cool. All right. So we have to talk about Sepang, because and I know you know this, you set two records, that being the first American to get a pole in World Supersport, and then you carried on to get a win in World Supersport as the first American. Well done.
Yeah, thanks a lot. I appreciate it.
I mean, and not only that, in fact, the whole weekend was great, but because almost every race came down to the last lap, including the Asian Cup Series, but you and Jules Cluzel, that last lap was brutal. And on top of that, frankly, I hope you bought Lorenzo Zanetti a beer, because he put he put Keenan down into fourth just at the very end.
Yeah, for sure. You know, that race was definitely a good race. All weekend, I just had my head on straight going into the weekend. I had Barry Gilson with me from Celtic Racing. He's my my mentor and my manager and my friend and everything in the same thing. You know, he's a great guy, and he really helped me throughout the whole weekend. And he was at the start of the year for me in Thailand when I got my first podium.
Yeah, but let me pause you just for a moment. There were a bunch of us watching live and commenting on it, I think on the WIRA bulletin board. And we were all like, Barry, when you pulled into Parc Fermé. We're like, ah, Barry's there. And he actually looks like he's been eating well. You might want to pass that along. I'll call him and tell him myself. But that was cool, because you guys do have the history from back at Celta Racing.
Yeah, for sure. You know, it's like he's had Chaz Davies ride for him, and right. And Chaz is now, like, you know, battling for a world championship. He's had Michael Lafferty ride for him,
right.
And you know, a lot of people. So yeah, it's really good to have Barry there, and it's good to have somebody in the corner there for you. That even if you're having a bad day, he's still there to cheer you up and tell you you're the best. You know. So yeah, I can't thank him enough for being there for the whole weekend. But to get back to Sepang, the whole weekend was going great. You know, wet and dry, I was really, really fast. And then I got pole, which I was quite surprised, because Jules usually grabs that and puts in a really, really good lap time. But then we went into the race, and you know, the most thing I was really happy about was that I led every lap. And once I got into the lead in the race, I wanted to lead every lap right to the finish and try to win this thing. I was quite disappointed just about the last corner, because I overprotected it too much, as I thought Jules was right there, because on my pit board it said about plus 0.2. So I really didn't know how close he was, and I overshot the last corner. So I still think about that in my dreams when I sleep. But, you know, it was really good, and I got a good drag to the line to beat him for the race win.
You essentially kind of did an inside-outside-in on him. Because once he went up the inside of you, he went a little bit wide, and you just ripped up the inside. That was relatively close. What was it, like 0.06 or something like that?
Yeah, it was so close at the finish, you know. But I also think when I went really wide, he saw the opportunity to get me, and he just dove into the corner. So I kind of knew that he was going to go wide once he made the pass, because he was already drifting out a little bit. And then I just brought my bike back, because it was turning perfectly all weekend, and I just got him real, real easy, you know.
Tire-wise, management-wise, how did that go?
Yeah, you know, I think I was on the edge of the tire. I didn't have much tire left at the end of the race, but you know, I was trying so hard to put my fastest lap time in at the on the last lap, but I just couldn't do it. I was still in the 2:09 seconds, but I wasn't too far off. We were about 0.4 tenths off my fastest lap for the whole race, so it was quite good, and we had quite a good pace, and the bike was still pretty strong at the end.
The weather there, obviously, very warm, very humid, although it did, I think it did cool off on a race day, just a tad. Brutal conditions, or were you all set?
Yeah, you know, once I got into the lead, it was raining the whole time. It was sprinkling, yeah. You know, and I really wasn't going to put my hand up until at least we got more than halfway, and then you know that the race would be called. So yeah, I was just I just kept going. I didn't care really how bad the rain was gonna get, but I wasn't stopping the race because I just felt like it was my race to win.
Do you remember what compounds you were running?
Yeah, I think I was running the new Zero, which is a softer compound.
Okay, all right. Front and rear.
In the front, I'm not sure what we had.
Okay. All right. Anyway, right now, and I'm almost jealous. You guys are on a bit of an extended vacation. I think you get 7 weeks, which just bugs the hell out of me. I wish I had a 7-week vacation. But that being said, I know that you're probably training and working your butt off. Although right now you probably are kicking back and maybe having a nice evening dinner, but what are you doing during your off time?
Yeah, you know, once I got back, I really just started to do my normal thing. I just got back into riding like I love doing every day. You know, I don't really get sick of it. And then, yeah, I just got back into normal training with like cycling and running and stuff. But I've mainly just been doing a lot of motocross every day and supermoto. I've kind of got into go-karting with some 125 Rotaxes, which is pretty much a blast.
Ooh, fun.
But yeah, that's all I've been really doing, you know, eating healthy and getting ready for this next race, because it's going to be the last three rounds are going to be pretty intense.
Have you been down to Josh Heron's compound at all yet?
No, I've never been down there.
All right, you should go down. All right, so your plans, because everybody wants to know. People that know that I was going to talk to you, everybody asked me the same question. I know that you weren't at Indy MotoGP just for fun. You were there, and there were some things that were being talked about. Is there anything you can tell me from that?
Yeah, I mean, I was just on a holiday for the weekend, really.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, a lot of people came up to me and stuff and congratulated me, and it was really cool to see the AMA paddock and see a whole bunch of people and stuff. Yeah, there was a couple teams and stuff that I was talking to just to see what was going on and stuff like that, but I don't know. I'm just kind of focusing on the rest of the season, and hopefully we'll see what happens for next year.
You told me I could ask you anything. I always warned you. If you were going to, would you rather pay to ride in World Superbike, say GP, or get paid to ride in one of the support classes?
What do you mean? Like,
if you were to move up,
no, I would definitely not pay for a ride. No
okay.
way.
Okay. All right. And I like that.
No way.
Yeah. All right. No more questions need to be asked. All right. Any sponsors or anybody that you want to thank before I let you go?
Yeah, you know, I just want to thank that all the people that have been behind me, even yourself. You know, it's been great, and it's been a huge path. You know, since I was about 12 years old when I first got on my road race bike. You know, there's been so many people that have been behind me. I can't even list the amount of people. All my sponsors this year: Arai, Revit, CD, Pat Crowley, Barry Gilson, and just all my personal sponsors and people like that, you know. Just, I don't know, never give up on your dreams, because they will come true if you keep chasing them, you know.
It's a little surprising when that happens, because there are times where you think it won't.
Exactly.
Yep. All right, brother. Take care of yourself. Enjoy the rest of your time off. And 3 races left. Go out and make us folks in the States proud.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Jim. Thanks for everything.
All right, thank you, man.
Thanks again to Jim for those really interesting chat with PJ. As we said at the top of the show, if you do get the chance to go see Hitting the Apex in cinemas, definitely go and see it. Or if not, you can go onto Amazon or whatever online retail store you use, and you can pre-order the DVD. And it's a good watch. It's a really good watch.
Excellent. Okay. Quick results roundup from the weekend. It was British Superbikes at the amazing Cadwell Park Circuit, just up the road from me in Lincolnshire.
Yes. Before we get on to the Superbike class, Dave, you had a very, very interesting weekend in BSB. As fans of Motorpod will know, Dave has his hands in several riders' pockets. And
that sounds so wrong.
Well, you know, just keep going with it. Both your riders had a pretty good weekend, I'd say.
That's very kind of you. Thank you very much. Yeah, the boys did good this weekend. Josh Elliott in Stock 1000, the Northern Irish racer for Morello Racing Team. He was, before the weekend, 17 points ahead of Alistair Seeley, the Tyco BMW rider. And basically, Seeley had the upper hand over the past couple of rounds after Josh got injured at Brands and he hurt his shoulder. Big weekend for Josh, and the boy came up trumps. I've never seen him so determined. He won the race, a shortened 8 lapper because unfortunately of a couple of incidents out on circuit. After 2 laps, the race was red flagged, and then again after 8 laps, it was red flagged. So it didn't quite go full distance, but Josh certainly showed that there was nobody going to head him on Sunday. I don't think I've ever seen him ride so strong. To open the gap now to 22 points with 3 rounds left, which basically needs Alistair Seeley needing snookers to close the gap in the championship. So see what happens at Alton Park in a week and a half's time. But great to see Josh get the win, well received by the crowd. And the second piece of good news was my little protege, Jordan Weaving. Harry says, 3 years now I've been helping out with Jordan and looking after his affairs and helping him with sponsorship and anything I can, you know, polishing his fairing, whatever it needed. It's been a difficult year for him this year with the transition from the KTM 250 to a stock 600. No sticky Dunlops, they're slippery Pirelli cut slicks. In fact, they're pretty much, they're Diablo courses. They're not even, you know, they are road tires, but they actually look like cut slicks. But yeah, they're Pirelli Diablo courses, a heavier bike, completely different riding style, different setup. And you know, he's had some difficult weekends, but he's plugged away. And this weekend, he brought his ZX6R home in second place behind his teammate Mason Law. So a team 1-2 for NMT No Limits Kawasaki, and me making a fool of myself at the foot of the mountain, almost in tears. You know what? I can't lie. We were sat with friends, and I said, I'm not normally particularly superstitious, but I sat and watched the first. Friends had come over from town, and I found them out in the big crowd at the bottom of the mountain. And I sat with them, and Josh had a great race. He won. So I said, right, I'm coming back to watch Jordan's race. And I sat in the same place and we did the same thing. And then Jordan finished second, and, you know, they were all so pleased. And unfortunately, you know, Jordan did give us a bit of a scare on the Saturday. He'd been second fastest in free practice. He'd got a bit of traffic in qualifying one and didn't do so well. But Q2, he'd put a decent fast time in. And then unfortunately, and this slight story about a racer's mentality after this and what they can feel and what they can't feel. But after 10 minutes, he was on the brakes into barn corner, and unfortunately the front tucked. The bike went into the barriers and Jordan followed it in feet first and sort of wrenched his ankle, his left ankle, the gear change ankle. So the session was red flagged and he was taken to the med center. Now, this is the first time I've actually experienced that 15-minute lull where we didn't know what had happened. And it was the worst 15 minutes I think I've ever experienced at racing.
Yeah, that must be pretty tough.
Yeah, and it is, because this maybe just gives people a little bit of an insight into it. You see people crash and you wish them well and they have the delay for the red flag and everything. But unless you have a personal interest in them, it's like, okay, hope he's all right. No problem at all. And we'll find out later.
Yeah.
But the red, Jordan had gone past. I didn't actually see him come back down the other side. I wasn't taking a lot of notice. I was watching the other guys. But the red flag was thrown and I was like, okay, first thing I do is count the boys home. And I knew he was behind Taz McKenzie, son of former Grand Prix rider Neil McKenzie. And Taz came in and then a couple of other riders and then another rider. And it was that point I looked to Emily and a friend, Craig Lowe, was with us, listener to Motopod, who listened to the show on the way up from his home just outside London. Thank you for spending the time with us this weekend, Craig. It was great to have you along. And I just waited and I counted them in, and then you had that horrible sinking feeling that shit, he hasn't come round. And then you have the point where on the commentary, Fred Clark goes, "Oh, Jordan Weaving, we've lost Jordan Weaving. He's down at barn." And it said, "Rider requires attention." And you're like, "Oh, for fuck's sake." Mm. Oh, no. So his dad was away off at the other side of Hall Bends. So we walked back to the hospitality unit and we just sat there in pretty much total silence on the outside waiting for his dad to ring. And thankfully, you know, 15 minutes later, he rang. Yeah, he sat up. He's in the med center. He just couldn't move his ankle when he hit the wall. So because there's no... The med center's in the middle. There's a little island in the middle at Cadwell where pit lane is, where race control is, and you can only get across there at certain times. And there's no... the kart track around the outside of a circuit for an ambulance to get there. Yeah. So you have to red flag the session to allow the ambulance on the circuit to go and pick the rider up to evacuate them to the med center. So it can look worse than it is, because normally, red flags are thrown for serious incidents, not just somebody sliding off.
Yeah.
Just the worst feelings ever, because you always fear, the worst when there's an ambulance and it says rider needing attention. But as it was, he sat up in the med center, he sort of tweaked his ankle a little bit, and then spent the rest of the afternoon on crutches getting sympathy from a lot of scantily clad and very pretty girls.
Yeah, so, you gotta milk it for all it's worth when you're a racer.
Oh, he did. It's like, man, if I have to listen to this story one more time, and there was a little bit more embellishment here and there. And so I said to him one point, I said, Jordan, you tell this story one more time and that ankle's going to be caught in the back wheel and severed, but sewn back together before the checkered flag was thrown on the session. So yeah, really, really good weekend for the boys, and thank you for bringing that up, mate. It's a little bit of self-indulgent on my part, but no, yeah, we had a fantastic weekend.
Yeah, no, and you say it's self-indulgent, I guess it is, but I think that being as deeply involved in the BSB paddock and with riders as you are, is that also brings a very unique perspective to racing, because as you say, when we see someone like in the Brno MotoGP or Moto3 race when Gabriel Rodrigo crashed, obviously everyone was quite shocked by that, but until you're air quotes intimate with the person, that makes it a completely different thing. And I certainly think that that's one thing that we try and achieve with Motopod, is to bring as many different perspectives and as many unique perspectives from the paddock as we can. So
yeah, sure. No, thank you for that.
I think that's also
why we don't have any interviews from BSB, because I just don't have the time.
Yeah, exactly. So there. That's also why that Jenny Tinmouth interview still hasn't happened.
It hasn't. And just by the time you get to certain points in the day, and as we'll come to with the rate with when we go over the BSB races, I don't get to see any races apart from Stock Thou and Stock Six.
Mm.
The only other race I saw over the weekend was the Supersport sprint race on the Saturday afternoon. We didn't even get to see Superbike qualifying because we were busy feeding our fat faces at a barbecue. So, it was it's not the most race-filled weekend, but they're certainly filled weekends.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's true of, working in any sort of racing is, unfortunately, working in racing, you don't really get to watch that much racing.
No.
But anyway.
Just the ones that matter.
Yep. Exactly. So quickly onto BSB. It was pretty much a Josh Brooks weekend. Josh Brooks he's on fire. That R1 has been developed. It had a pretty rough start to the season, but as the season's gone on, both Brooks and the new Yamaha have adapted perfectly to each other, and they now seem to be an almost unstoppable combination.
Yeah, they do. I mean, every session, Josh Brooks was top of the timing sheets from free practice one right the way through to Q3. There was nobody going to stop him this weekend, and off the back of a double-double from Brands Hatch and from Thruxton, he really is carrying the baton this year so far, this part of the season.
Yeah.
Shaky at the moment, in second place in the championship. He really don't know what's going on there. Something has gone wrong massively. For someone who's on the same motorcycle as last year, with the same crew, with the same everything.
Mm.
He had options to go elsewhere, but he stayed with the same team, staying with the same crew, same bike. And they're just nowhere near. One thing that they do run, they run the KTEX suspension. Whereas the Yamahas and some of the other Kawasaki teams run Olins. I don't know whether maybe that's an issue. Maybe the K-Tech hasn't. The Olins have made a jump and K-Tech aren't quite there. I don't know. I'm surmising, but there's certainly issues in the Shaky Byrne camp at the moment.
Mm, but luckily with the showdown system, Byrne can have, you know, one rough weekend like he had at Cadwell this weekend, and he's still, you know, very much in the championship hunt, because I think he still technically has one more podium credit than he now has four less podium credits than Josh Brooks, but you know, at the beginning of the showdown, that'll still only be a difference of 4 points. So even with a bad weekend, he's still right in there.
And as much as Shaky hates the showdown, if he wins it this year on the back of the showdown, I think he'll be the biggest fan ever.
Yeah,
because at the moment where the point standings are when we get to the post race results and the standings, there would be some work to do over the course of a standard season.
Yeah. So we'll quickly go over the two races. Both races were pretty much ruled by Josh Brooks. He won the first race by almost 2 seconds, and that was including a safety car that closed everything up. And then the second race, he won by 5 seconds. So, you know, as we say, Brooks pretty much unstoppable. In the first race, Danny Buchan had quite a scary crash coming down from landing over the mountain. He crashed right in the blind spot of the mountain, so they had to bring out the safety car, and luckily no riders landed on Buchan, because obviously, you know, the problem with the jump, and especially a blind jump like that, is you can't adjust your trajectory too much midair if you suddenly at the last second realize that there's someone standing where your bike's going to land.
Which has led me on to something that I meant to mention to you before the start of the show. If we could add in to the show notes, Scott Jones was at Cadwell this weekend.
Yeah,
the MotoGP photographer. And he has basically a rundown of the mountain itself. So certainly for the guys overseas who've not had a chance to see the footage, I'm sure people have seen footage on YouTube and what have you, but maybe guys out there that haven't sampled Cadwell Park, to read Scott Jones's piece on Cadwell Park. It's like a photo story.
Mm.
Have a read of that. He explains it, 'cause it was his first visit to Cadwell Park. He went to Knockhill earlier in the season, but this was his first visit to Cadwell Park, and he was blown away by the place. I had the great fortune to sit and have a chat with him on Saturday afternoon alongside Steve English. So it didn't take, you know, he was just absolutely blown away by the place. So if we could put those into the show notes afterwards, Harry, that'd be great for everybody to have a look at.
Yep, that link will be in the show notes. But yeah, so Brooks ran away with both races.
Easy for you to say.
The fight for second and third was pretty close, especially in the first race. In the first race, Billy McConnell, he scored his first podium finish since moving up to the BSB class, and he put through one or two pretty rough moves on the likes of Tommy Bridwell and Luke Mossy. So race one
was... Super sport passes.
Yeah, they were definitely using his super sport technique. So race one was quite entertaining, and race two was pretty much the same sort of thing. In both races, Peter Hickman was pretty close to Josh Brooks, and then it was kind of a mix of BMWs and Kawasaki's fighting for third.
Good news for Peter Hickman on that. You know,
yeah.
to come from where, you know, off the back of the roads this year and his successes there. He won one of the races at Cadwell last year. That was his first BSB win. In fairly damp conditions, let's say. Take a double second place last weekend at his local track, but in bright sunshine, deserves a mention for a friend of the show, Peter Hickman, especially after his huge high side on Saturday that left him with a very, very badly bruised left elbow.
Yeah.
So he wasn't at his fittest.
Nope. And it was a bit of a disappointing weekend for John Hopkins as well. As I've mentioned, Hopper came back to BSB on the Ducati and had some pretty good rounds. But this weekend, not so great for Hopper. He finished race one in 16th spot, just outside the points. And then in race two, he got taken out by another rider in the closing laps. So a pretty disappointing weekend for Hopper after really showing some promise.
Yeah. I mean, that's four rounds. That's four races now where he's struggled to make his mark. The first one at Thruxton was a mechanical DNF. So obviously nothing he can do about that. Crashed at Club Chicane in race two at Thruxton, and, you know, finishing out the points in race one And then obviously Howie Mayne wearing smart, taking him out on the run into Barn on the last lap. Again, wasn't ideal. And look at team manager Steve Wolf Moore. That man has no look whatsoever this season. He said, I think he went on social media and said that the crash damage bill from this weekend was more than he paid for his last car.
Ouch.
So it's cost him a fair amount of money over the last few races, especially after Kuba's offs. And he just posted a picture of himself with this very straight face when at the end of the superbike race, it absolutely tipped it down. And he's just stood there with rain on his glasses, rain on his face, and you just catch his mood perfectly. And it's just like, why am I doing this?
Yeah, certainly owning a race team especially seems to be pretty difficult. It seems
especially when you're having a run of shit luck like Lloyd's British Moto Rapido Ducati are.
Yeah.
Let's hope for better results for the team and for Hopper at Alton Park next time out.
Yeah, but quickly onto the championship standings. Brooks leads with 316 points. But unfortunately, as we know in BSB, points don't really matter in the end, and it's all about podium credits. So Brooks has 45 podium credits against Shane Burns, 41. Then James Ellison, who despite missing this round with a broken wrist, is still third overall and third overall in podium credits. He has 19. Then in fourth overall with just 6 podium credits is Tommy Bridewell, followed by Stuart Easton with 12 podium credits. As we know, Stuart Easton has missed the last 3 rounds with his quite badly broken leg. But it looks like he might be able to just stay in that top 6 for the showdown with a bit of luck, maybe.
Yeah, I think with a little bit of luck, he should be able to do it. It depends on Dan Linfott and the results that he can bring in. Mm-hmm. For the 3 races at Alton Park next time out, 1 on the Saturday afternoon and 2 on the Sunday. It's a triple header before we run into the showdown, which starts at Assen 2 weeks post Alton Park. One thing, looking at the BSB Championship, looking at the consistency of Josh Brooks is just frightening.
Yeah.
He's not been out of the top 3 since the second race at Donington Park at round 1.
It's Lorenzo-esque.
Yeah, it is. It really is. And as you said, in a standard championship season, he'd be 39 points ahead of Shane Byrne.
Yeah, and even with all those double and triple races in BSB, that's still a pretty solid lead.
Yeah, it is at this time of the season, very much so. But then if the... as you say, if the showdown was to go now, then he would only be 4 points ahead of Shane Byrne.
Yeah, and that's not a very big lead.
No.
But perhaps maybe not the biggest surprise, but the biggest puzzle of BSB is Ryuichi Kiyonari. So Josh Brooks has 316 points, and Shane Byrne has 277 points. Ryuichi Kiyonari, who is a multiple-time champion and challenged for the title last year, this year has 54 points. And has 0 podium credits.
It's a desperately poor season for him. It is an absolute enigma.
Yeah, even by Ryuichi Kiyonari's crazy up and down standards, this is a pretty bad season.
This is going on to the form that he showed in his last year with HM Plant Honda, when he had to go away and really find himself. And then when he came back on the build-based BMW, obviously he put a great season together last season. And the two races at Silverstone between himself and Shaky were just two of the best races that we've ever seen in the championship. But yeah, I don't quite see him doing that this year, to be honest.
No,
it's really not happening. And, you know, you've got guys in there above him on 88 points, Billy McConnell, Luke Mossy. They're rookies to the series. Richard Cooper on the BMW on 93 points.
Yeah, or, you know, Christian Iden on the Suzuki. Sure, Iden's raced in superbikes, but you'd expect a factory BMW to be able to beat a Suzuki, you know?
Yeah, and the Suzuki's, the team as a whole, the household Bennett Suzuki, is struggling as a whole at the moment. Christian Iden and Josh Waters, fresh from his Suzuka 8-hour podium. But, yeah, who knows what's where with Keo. Even bringing Richard Cooper into the mix hasn't kind of spurred him on in any way, shape or form. And it just seems it's almost like he's going through the motions. It doesn't seem to be. What did he score over the weekend? He got 14th in race 1,
and that was it.
and that was it.
Yeah, he scored 2 points.
He didn't complete race two.
Yeah.
So, yeah, it's a difficult one. Whether he'll be back next season remains to be seen. He's not the championship draw he used to be. He looks the shadow of the man that he was.
And that's the thing, you know, he can go from having a bad year to be challenging for the title last year, and then straight back to a bad year.
I couldn't believe the turnaround last year when, you know, everybody was writing him off, and, you know, including myself, was like, you know, really, is he really going to do anything this year? And then he gelled with the BMW. Obviously, they've build base with the official factory team last year. That has since moved to the Tyco BMW team with Tommy Bridwell and Michael Laverty. So I don't know what help they're getting, whether they had to sort things out themselves or what. I don't know what's obviously going on behind the scenes there. But even his, is his teammate above? Oh no, Jacko's just behind him.
Only six points behind.
Lee Jackson's just 6 points behind him as the rookie in the class. So.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of inward questions to be asked of the three-time British champion.
Yeah, so we'll have to see what happens to Keo. You know, as ever, Keo is a big question mark and shoulder shrug. So yeah, I don't get Ryuichi Kinari. I don't think anyone gets Ryuichi Kinari, to be honest.
No, not at all. Anyway, I think that's it for this week.
No, we still have one more very important bit.
That's it. I have to go to work.
It has been.
I've been there all day, but I've got to go back.
It has been a. Okay, first we'll go through the overall standings for the Motorpod Fantasy League. The pin is 19132 for the MCN Fantasy League. It's quite late in the season now, so if you're just starting up, you're probably going to be at quite a big disadvantage.
But
leading the Motorpod League is Robertino Bobbino with 1,344 points, which is good enough to put him 170th overall out of the however many thousands of people sign up for the MCN League.
Great job.
He is followed by Steve James and Roger England. All three of those guys are split by just 7 points, so still all to play for at the top of the Motorpod League. But we come down to the real business end, the real reason we do this, the hosts sub-league. So Martin Darlington has kindly supplied some notes for us, and I'll run down those notes. So Jules Cizek, who was right up in second and really challenging Martin for second, Jules scored no points due to having both Easton and O'Halloran in his team. Obviously, both Easton and O'Halloran, unfortunately, injured from BSB. Then perhaps more importantly, Dave Neal scored a massive 1 point due to Howie Mainwaring Smart scoring a single point in race one, but Dave's other rider was also another runner. Oops.
James Ellison.
Big D. Those are Martin's words, not mine. Big D may have to start looking over his shoulder as Race Racing, i.e. Jim Race, is running up towards him. And in honour of Len's consistency, he will henceforth be known as Marco Melandri. God, that's harsh. until Len throws a strop and storms off to join a lower league podcast.
Oh, well, so that's
the
American Spanish fraternity offended anyway.
Yep. Brits, you're up next for being horribly offended by Martin Darlington, so look forward to that next week. but in the host league, leading we have Scott Bolton followed by Martin Darlington. Then I am 18 points behind Martin. Jules has now slipped down to fourth in the league.
Yeah, talk about looking over your shoulder, Mr. Darlington. And is young Mr. Lloyd's creeping.
And is quite far behind me now. Then we have Dave Neal and Jim Race and Len Padilla bringing up the rear. Dave has 992 points, whereas Jim Race has 859. So, to be fair to Len, is only 50 points behind Jim. So, you know, That's still all to play for there. There was a transfer window. I think it's now shut.
You what?
I don't know. Depends on when people listen to this podcast. If you've downloaded this on Thursday when it goes up, I would probably very hurriedly check the MCN league to see if you can transfer.
Whoa, it was only open on Monday. I haven't had a chance yet.
Well, I know what Dave's doing after this podcast.
Yeah, I'll check. Yeah.
And,
me too. Me too. Yes, I'm going to check my substitutions.
And with that, that is a show. Obviously, coming up, we have MotoGP at Silverstone this weekend. Important note that the Moto3 race is the last race of the day due to TV scheduling times. So don't fret if you wake up early and think that you've missed it. It's coming at the end. They're saving the best for last for once.
They do that because we're an hour behind Central European time.
Yeah, so it mucks
MotoGP
it all up.
MotoGP has to go at 1 o'clock, doesn't at 2 o'clock Central European time, doesn't it?
Yep. So I get an hour lie-in before I have to go to work, which is lovely. But the whole
I'll already be there.
Yep, you'll already be there. And yeah,
thank you again.
No worries. It's looking to be a great weekend. You know, obviously Rossi and Lorenzo right at the top. Then there's Marc Marquez and the X Factor. Nothing to lose. I'm very excited for the last seven races of the season.
Me too. But one thing to note, dear listeners, that it is a bank holiday weekend in the UK. It's the last one of the year before Christmas. It's the last weekend of the school holidays. So please expect a wet weekend at Silverstone.
Exactly. And I don't know. I've said this before, but we need a properly wet race in MotoGP. We've not had a properly fully wet race for a long, long time.
No, none of this slightly wet, slightly dry, let's change bikes and throw things in the air. No.
Full on, raining.
Start to finish. Wet tyres, everything.
Struggling to hold umbrellas on the grid, all sorts of
stuff. Johnny suits, all a lot. We want everything.
Yep, exactly. So hopefully Silverstone can at least deliver that. And we'll be back next week to bring you all the news, intrigue, and updates from Silverstone. And we'll catch you then.
Bye-bye.
Bye.